Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Bonnie North. The Minority Health Film Festival kicks off in Milwaukee on Thursday. This will be the first festival of its kind in the country, offering not just films, but community forums and a health fair, all related to the health issues facing racial and ethnic minority populations. Diabetes is one of those issues the festival is highlighting. More than 30 million American adults are living with the disease, and in the Hispanic population, more than 50% of both men and women are affected. Chef Leticia Moreno-Schwartz is featured in the documentary A Touch of Sugar, which screens this Saturday. In the film, the chef uses her passion for healthy cooking to help a Hispanic woman with type 2 diabetes improve her eating habits. Moreno-Schwartz herself has personal history with diabetes. Her grandfather passed away from its complications. Chef Moreno-Schwartz explains her involvement in this project to Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski.
Leticia Moreno-Schwartz, thank you for joining me on Lake Effect today.
Thank you so much for having me.
So the film A Touch of Sugar is a documentary that confronts America's diabetes crisis one community at a time. So can you explain your role in this documentary and how it touches upon the way diabetes impacts the Hispanic community in the USA?
In the movie, in the film, I play the role of myself, which is a chef, you know, looking to share my passion for healthy cooking and to help people, especially in the Hispanic community, improve their eating habits, as, you know, many people struggle to manage their type 2 diabetes, especially when they are, you know, in underserved communities or rural communities. So I see that a lot in this country, that, you know, underserved communities are definitely more affected by type 2 diabetes.
Right. And what elements impact someone's treatment for type 2 diabetes?
There are so many varieties, Audrey, that, you know, can be caused to the impact. Like, for example, language barriers is one, for sure. Access to information and education. Sometimes even basic things like cooking classes, nutritional classes, if you have access to those, you're much better off. And there are many people who don't. And even the stigma, I feel that there is a certain stigma that affects people with type 2 diabetes, and just cultural influences also, because sometimes it can be very linked to, you know, the foods that a certain culture, and in my case, the Latin community, will stick to eating.
Right. And considering that more than 50% of Hispanic men and women are affected by diabetes in the U.S., that is a very drastic and direct correlation.
Correct.
So I'm curious, what was your relationship with food like growing up, and what influenced you to become a chef?
Yeah, that's a great question, because I actually, like, I have a personal connection with type 2 diabetes. When I was very young, my grandfather was diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, and I kind of like grew up watching my grandmother and my grandfather kind of like fight constantly, because she would isolate him and she would not prepare the same kinds of foods that the rest of the family would eat. And I think that after the loss of my grandfather, we kind of like realized that we had to reevaluate the whole thing. And especially growing up in Brazil, that wasn't very hard to do, because it lends to, you know, I grew up in Rio de Janeiro, which is it's a city right on the beach. So it's something that, you know, it was very easy to start incorporating exercising and fresh produce and fruits and vegetables into our lifestyle. But I definitely remember, you know, the fight between my grandparents. And I feel that it's something that it still happens a lot. I think that one of the trickiest points about type 2 diabetes is that, you know, you should never isolate a member of the family. And as a chef, that's my goal, is to try to inspire people to come together in the kitchen and cook together and eat together, and not just one meal for those who have type 2 diabetes and a different meal for those who don't. You know, I think that what I'm trying to do with the movie, with my books, with my work, is to show that healthy meals can still be delicious. I think that we still have a lot of people associating, oh, this is too healthy for me, this is too boring, you know, this is tasteless, flavorless. And my goal is to show exactly the opposite, is that healthy food can be absolutely delicious, full of flavor, and that you can crave for a salad. You can crave for a quinoa with mushrooms and chicken sausage that are healthy and delicious for you. And the other thing is that I try to really encourage, again, people coming together in the kitchen, because I think that in this country, what we're seeing right now is nobody has time for anything. Like, it's the biggest excuse, right? We have like, what, 300 emails in our mailboxes, and nobody has time to cook. Nobody has time to exercise, and we're getting sicker and fatter, you know, and the answer is right in front of us. We can be a healthier nation if we cook more and we eat, you know, better food.
You mentioned the family aspect, the communal aspect of cooking together, of eating together. And often people get very attached to those traditional family recipes. You know, there's one way to make it. You need these ingredients. And do you find that there's often a lot of resistance when you're bringing these modified and new recipes that are a healthier twist on a classic dish? You know, whatever community you're trying to influence, we all have our dishes that we don't want to change, even if it's going to be better for us.
Right. There's definitely, I see every once in a while, I see like, this so-called resistance, like, no, I don't want to try this. For example, in my new cookbook, I am offering a new version of rice and beans. Rice and beans is the backbone, you know, of Latin culture. And my whole life, I grew up eating rice and beans, white rice and black beans. And all of a sudden, I created this version, which is more like, you know, a mixture of wild rice, brown rice, beans, and a lot of vegetables, you know, giving flavor, almost like a sofrito. And it's absolutely delicious, and it's so much healthier. So until they try, you know, that resistance, I usually find that, you know, you end it until you try. The same thing happens with, for example, brigadeiro. Brigadeiro is a candy. It's a Brazilian candy. It's more like a chocolate truffle or a chocolate fudge. And originally, it is made with sweetened condensed milk and Nesquik, which is, you know, a very sugary cocoa powder, right? And I mean, it's delicious. And in every birthday celebration in Latin America, you'll see a version of brigadeiro. But then I created this healthy version of brigadeiro made with coconut milk and enrobed in cocoa nibs instead of chocolate sprinkles. And usually people, I gave a few to even my family. They said, healthy brigadeiro, I don't think there's any such a thing as healthy brigadeiro. And then they try. And then it's like, oh my goodness, this is amazing, you know? So I think that when you have good food, it's a win situation. The food speaks for itself.
Right. And when it comes to your recipe development, whether, like you said, you're modifying a traditional backbone recipe or making something new, what are you keeping in mind for making a recipe for people with diabetes? Are there certain food groups you are avoiding, ones to make more of? You mentioned you're supplementing ingredients, adding more vegetables. Is there a formula to what you're doing?
Well, this formula is very vague, because the truth is diabetes is not the kind of disease that one size fits all, which is the reason why, and I say it all the time, remember, I am a chef, I'm not a doctor. So the most important thing is for each person to work with their doctors to develop a treatment plan that's right for you, so that each person can be on top of their A1C goal. A1C is really a blood sugar test that doctors use to look at your sugar levels over a period of 2 to 3 months. And it's one of the most important terms in the vocabulary of diabetes, because it can tell you whether you are managing, you know, the treatment plan, you know, in a proper way. And that too will help you guide the foods you may or may not want to eat. So some people might not even be, you know, able to eat bananas, while other people can eat bananas because it's fruit and it's natural. So it's really an individualized, it's case by case. But going back to your original question, overall, I try to, you know, make substitutions, generally speaking, that are, you know, that just make a recipe more diabetes friendly and healthier in general. So, for example, one of the recipes that I offer in our campaign, America's Diabetes Challenge, is arroz con pollo, which is a very classic, you know, Latin dish. And instead of using white rice, I use brown rice. Instead of using regular chorizo, I use turkey sausage. You know, so there's always small substitutions that you can, you know, make to turn a dish a little bit healthier.
What have you found to be people's biggest first step challenge when it comes to changing their lifestyle in order to live with type 2 diabetes? You mentioned your role in this documentary is being a helpful guide for a person in the kitchen. What's their main, not necessarily mental holdup, but what do they find to be the biggest first step for them?
I think that when people first receive the diagnosis, it's kind of like the end of the world. And then little by little, they discover that living with type 2 diabetes certainly has its challenges, but the disease can be managed with the help of a strong support system and just by working with your doctor and developing a plan that's individualized and right for you. You know, I think that that resistance that we mentioned just a minute ago also plays a role into they receiving the diagnosis. Sometimes it's like, do you really need to receive the diagnosis that you have type 2 diabetes to know that you have to exercise, to know that you have to make time to cook at home and eat healthy foods? So again, it's kind of like, people, we don't need to go that far. You don't need to see a nutritionist to know that, you know, an apple is so much better than a bag of chips. But I feel that there's a lot of people out there who need that shake, but that shake might come a little too late. So what we try to inspire in this movie is for people to take action, for people to come together, for people to exercise together. Like, if you have a member of your family that have type 2 diabetes, be a partner with them, exercise together, cook together, you know, and just like there are very small steps that you can do in cooking, there are small steps that you can do just in life, you know, on a day by day, like park your car a little bit farther so that you can walk a little more. Don't take the elevator and go up the stairs, you know, things like that. You need to kind of like always think about, you know, small steps that you can make to live a healthier lifestyle.
Well, Leticia Moreno Schwartz, thank you again so much for taking a little bit of time to speak with me today.
Thank you so much, Audrey. It's my pleasure.
Leticia Moreno Schwartz is a chef, cookbook author, and spokesperson for America's Diabetes Challenge. She's featured in the new documentary called A Touch of Sugar. It'll be showing this Saturday at the Minority Health Film Festival in Milwaukee. She spoke with Audrey Nowakowski, and there's more information at WUWM.com.